Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
We've another jam-packed show for you this week on Dublin's Talking Sport. Deirdre Smith talks to us about Rory McIlroy's win in the Canadian Open and indeed his good run of form in the US Open this week as well. In rugby, we're joined by Will Slattery of the Irish Independent to talk about the United Rugby Championship final. Declan Drake and Sean Lane are in studio to talk all things GAA. And of course, League of Ireland with Alan Cawley discussing the defeat of Shamrock Rovers by Dundalk 1-0 in Oriel Park last night. So plenty for you this week on Dublin's Talking Sport. Download now wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm great. Really, really good. Had a good day's golf yesterday. I was down the K Club and went on.
Oh, right, very nice.
And I took the fiver, so life is good with that. But how about you?
What course did you play?
We played the South Course, and it was absolutely magnificent. It really was. The last time I played it actually was with you. It's a few years ago now. Yeah. I think we played.
Yeah.
Were we playing in the Marie Keating or one of those, I think, wasn't it?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Of course, yeah.
But all good with
you? Yeah, it's lovely. They've done great work as well to the old Palmer course.
Yeah.
They dug up a lot of the fairways there. Yeah, but done great work to it. So I'm looking forward to playing that. Yeah, I was actually playing the Belfry this week, which was fantastic, with Dennis Taylor and Stephen Hendry. And myself and Dennis took the money off Stephen Hendry, which is always, it's almost worth double of anybody else's money.
It's becoming
money,
a bit of a habit. Yeah, it's becoming a habit now. You're taking the money regularly off Hendry.
Yeah. So that was quite, we had a great day out. The weather's been fantastic here, you know, really, really warm. I'm sure it's same in Ireland. So yeah, really good golfing weather, you know. So the golf has been fantastic, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's been going really well. Rory, great run of form going again. And, you know, he could have fallen apart a bit yesterday, but he's managed to keep it together.
Yeah, that double bogey six, like, I mean, he was hacking at it a couple of times, like you and me, maybe, on the golf course. But now he managed to, didn't he nail that, like, 30-foot putt, you know, for a double bogey six. And that sort of, it sort of got him going, like, a little, because that could have been a triple, obviously. But no, he's playing superbly well. And what I like about him as well, he's putting very, very well, isn't he? You know, he's obviously full of confidence from winning in the Canadian last week, which was magnificent. You know, run and the way he played and finished it off against Justin Thomas. But now he's full of confidence. His putts are going in, and he's looking really, really good. He's nicely tucked in there on 4 under, only a shot behind Morikawa and Diamond, like, you know.
It's funny the way all the chat about the LIV tournament was last week, and Mickelson flopped out of the US Open this week. That could be his last US Open, they're saying, the way things are going. You know, they might be finding a way to keep him out of it now if they continue with this LIV tournament.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I can understand it a little bit, but I think what they should do is, see, they've got away with it a little bit, all these top players, because they can still play. The only major they can't play in is the PGA Championship. So they've really got the best of both worlds. They can play in this LIV Tour, which is going to pay them multi-million pounds, but they can still play in three of the majors because they're not sort of governed by the PGA themselves. So sort of that little loophole, which is sort of they should really make some sort of ruling on, you know?
Yeah, but, like, you know, even with Mickelson this week, you're turning up to an event and there's a bit of, you know, where these lads are used to being glorified and fans going mad for them, there's a little bit of bad feeling there.
Animosity towards them.
You don't want to be somewhere where you're not welcome either, though. It's tough.
Yeah. Well, they're not welcome because they feel like, the public feel like they've deserted, like, you know, that they've sort of cashed out. So you can understand from the public's side of view.
That's what I'm saying. You won't want to turn up. You wouldn't be like going into the crucible if everyone's booing you. You're not going to want to turn up.
No, exactly.
So you can't see them continuing to go and do it, though.
Oh, they will do. No, there's no doubt about it, because they are majors. Yeah, I mean, they won't care about the crowd because they'll be still chasing majors. But I think that loophole, you know, has to be filled in some way. I don't know whether it can be. Well, I think it should be. You know, I think Rory was brilliant. You know, the way he sort of came out about it. He says, look, I'm chasing majors. I want, and Larry, you know, there's a lot of them there really stood up and were counted, you know. But it's it's gonna be interesting how it's gonna. I don't know why they can't sort of come together and make it better for both tours that it can sort of succeed. But at the moment, there probably has something have to be done, you know.
We'll see what happens.
Bishambo's gone over, hasn't he? Yeah. As well, you know, he's another one who's jumped ship.
There's a lots of big names now that are really skirting the idea of it. And Deirdre was on last week talking about it, and she's worried because the money is so big that, you know, it's hard to keep turning it down if you keep getting fired money at it. But we'll wait.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll wait and see. Yeah. Now, what about the football? We were here last week a bit worried and talking about them, and what a brilliant performance against Scotland 3-0. And then,
fantastic.
The draw during the week wasn't bad either.
No, they played really well, didn't they, against Scotland? What a great result. For them, and even as you say, the result against Ukraine 1-1, and that could have been better. But I was delighted for Stephen Kenny and the team as well, because they were under a little bit of pressure. There was a few sort of little rumours, maybe he wasn't the man for the job. But he came up with the goods. I was delighted for him and the team as well. You know, they got a young team, you know, and but the result against Scotland would give them a great confidence. You know, I was delighted for them.
And what about the finish from Collins?
Different class.
Yeah, it really was. Outside of the booth, that's like you up at the fighting side every week when you used to be here. Outside of the booth,
that... No, I was a big toe job, you know. The big toe, they called me down there in Pembroke on the old Astro, the big toe job. But no, fantastic, great goal as well, you know.
Yeah, no, it really was.
It was quite funny. A lot of people were saying, get United to sign them straight away, you know. Because it's quite worrying, you know. You haven't signed anybody yet in this. They've been chasing this Frankie de Jong in Barcelona. Still nothing, you know, nobody, no other player. A lot of players have gone out. Four players have gone out. And maybe the goalkeeper as well, Dean Henderson, he might be on his way to Forest. So that's five players out, no players in. Of course, Liverpool have bought, Tottenham have bought, I think, four players. Mane looks like he's going to Bayern. Of course, Haaland has gone to Man City.
Yeah.
He's done at Manchester United. And Gary Neville was sort of tweeting during the week. He says, look, you know, they get back in for pre-season very, very soon. He needs the players there to sort of mould them before the start of the season. They need to sort of start their own business. Sort of goes to show how sort of United have fallen a little bit. You know, the players don't want to come to them because they're not in the Champions League as well, you know.
But it's not only that, though. It seems that they're just not organised. It seems they're kind of scrambling around now, and they'll end up with kind of the best of whatever's left behind by that everyone else didn't really want, which is a very strange position for a club like United to be in. It doesn't seem like they're doing anything to help themselves. You know, they're making, they're sort of making changes at the top and bringing in managers and directors and all sorts of stuff, but like where it really matters and putting a plan in place, that doesn't seem to have happened. It's just...
Well, I mean, they've been chasing this Frankie de Jong since the end of the season, but he's still... You know, I mean, he came out and said, look, I think I'm at the biggest club in the world. That's worrying for me straight away. I don't like to hear that. Because if you're chasing a player and he calls the club that he's the biggest club in the world already, well, then, you know, they should move on and try and find somebody else, because that's a worrying comment for me.
But sure. The business,
they would have had, you think they would have laid plans and sort of sowed the seeds for a lot of players to bring in, you know?
I think they'd have 10 or 12 lads in their sights that they're going around after and teeing up and in talks with and in the background and, you know, letting a few rumours out about it. There doesn't seem to be any of those whispers at all.
No, not at all. I mean, they could do with another central defender. They could definitely do with a central midfield player. And definitely a centre forward as well, you know, because Ronaldo's not going to be able to, you know, carry the flame. You know, he's 37, going on 38. I think he only just turned 38 yesterday, actually. But he's not going to be able to carry the flame and play in all the games, particularly the Europa League games as well. So they could probably deal with another centre forward, like, you know, as well. So they need, like, you know, two or three, possibly even four players, I would say, but haven't signed one yet. So that is quite worrying, yeah.
Very much so. Okay, what are you up to for the rest of the week?
Nothing. I just picked up Christian from school last night, so we're going to spend a little weekend in London. Of course, Father's Day as well tomorrow, so looking forward to that. Took him to see Jurassic Park last night. Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Going to watch Maverick. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm looking forward to that. You know, how about you?
I have a couple of Jurassic Park fans in my house, so no doubt.
All right, okay.
When I go to the cinema these days, it's for a sleep, you know, a bit of a snooze. I get a few kicks halfway through wake up. They're snoring. I can't hear the movie. So a bit like that these days. I will get a Top Gun. I'll probably go on the list as well. Okay, it's time to turn our attention to football now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley. How you doing, Al? You well?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm well, yeah. Not too bad at all. Interesting last night, I have to say, the games. Dundalk, they're really on a run of late. I think they've probably won their last six games or thereabouts anyway. And now they're just 5 points off the lead, and a bit of a shock one for Rovers to see themselves suddenly now having to get focused again.
Yeah, it was a huge night in Oriel Park, Reggie. And as you say, probably 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, we've been writing off the league title as a race. But I think we do have a race, and I'm delighted that we do. And for all the neutrals out there that want to see a title race, I think it was good in that sense. But obviously, from a Shamrock Rovers point of view, they'll be disappointed with the result. But from Dundalk and Stevie O'Donnell's angle, it's been some run of form. They've been absolutely phenomenal. And I initially thought Stevie was mad going back to Dundalk, considering the job he was doing at St. Pat's and what he was building there and coming off the back of finishing second and winning the FAI Cup. But his decision has been proved right, because he's beginning to look like doing something similar at Dundalk, and a fantastic result for him. And it looked, even some of the clips I seen, obviously there was a huge crowd at it as well, and it looks like maybe Dundalk getting back somewhere near what we obviously seen under the Stephen Kenny times, and bodes well for the future for them.
Yeah, absolutely, it does. And I mean, as you said, it's a fair achievement to get that squad of players up to that level. And I don't think it's a case of, you know, Rovers dropping off that much. I think it's more that Dundalk have brought the standard up.
Yeah, definitely, Reggie. And Stevie obviously did a great job at St. Pat's, so I don't think anyone was doubting him as a manager. The reason I was kind of dubious about him going back was just purely because I thought it was a massive rebuild that he may have to do, whereas he was halfway through that rebuild at St. Pat's. But to do it in the quick time that he's done it, obviously, and get them up to second in the table and only 5 points off Shamrock Rovers with a game in hand now, it's a remarkable turnaround, and fair play to him, because it's a brilliant job. And I was only even looking, someone had a stat on Twitter last night, and since the fans have come back to Oriel Park as well, I think it's 19, 20 games, Reggie, and they've only lost one, and they've won about 14 of them. So it just goes to show the impact they can have as well, when obviously the support is right behind them. And we've seen that throughout the Stephen Kenny time, and you look at it now again, Shamrock Rovers coming to Oriel Park and getting beat. So the serious momentum behind them now, Dundalk and Stevie, obviously they've no Europe distractions either. Shamrock Rovers will have that, which might help Dundalk also in terms of a title race. But I think, to be fair to Stevie O'Donnell, all the credit must go to him, because it's some turnaround.
Yes, and Al, of course, he brought Robbie Benson back to Oriel Park as well. Just an interesting team thing from a Dundalk perspective. This will interest you as a Manchester United supporter as well, although you're probably too young to remember it yourself. But Lewis McCarry playing for Dundalk, grandson of the great Lou McCarry. There you go.
And he set up the goal as well. Declan, unbelievable cross last night. If anyone hasn't seen it, it's doing the rounds on social media, but an unbelievable cross. And that man, as you mentioned, Robbie Benson, who has come back, and he was so influential when he was at Dundalk, then he was influential for Pats, and he's doing the same back at Dundalk again. He's a brilliant player, Robbie Benson, and it was a great goal from him.
And no better way, potentially, to bounce back for Shamrock Rovers than bring Bohemians to Tala Stadium next Friday night. 7,000 plus going to be at the game. It's going to be epic, isn't it?
Yeah, it should be absolutely brilliant, Declan. It's the best fixture in the calendar. As you know, the Dublin Derby, it's absolutely magnificent, especially over the last 3 or 4 years since kind of Bows have been up there at the top end of the table. I know this year they've had their struggles, but I was in Dalymount last night, and It was a backs to the wall performance against Shelburne. Shelburne probably dominated for large periods, Declan, throughout the whole game, but they never really carved out any clear-cut chances right up until the end. There was a brilliant ball Shane Farrell put across to the young lad. I think he was only making his debut at 16 as well, Hodgins, and he should have scored, really. It was unlucky the way maybe it came at him, but he should have scored. And they huffed and puffed Shelburne. That, as I said, Bowes were down to 10 men. They had a lot of the ball, Shelburne. It was mainly crosses into the box, but Bowes dealt with everything that they threw at them. I didn't think Shelburne did enough in terms of creativity, but there was a lot of pressure in terms of crosses and stuff like that into the box. But Bowes dealt with everything, and it was a big win for Bowes as well, especially, as you say, Declan, going into the Dublin Derby next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was a good week as well. We were here last week a bit worried, Alan, about Ireland, and in particular Stephen Kenny and the, you know, the results-wise. But what a way to bounce back. 3-0 against Scotland and a good result against Ukraine as well.
Yeah, brilliant week for them, and the manner in which they bounced back, I think, Reggie, was all the more impressive from coming off the back of the first two disappointing performances more than anything. And we mentioned last week how it's so reactionary and people just need to calm down and let Stephen get on with the job. But as you say, the pressure was on going into the game against Scotland, and it was a magnificent result. And I think he had to change it in terms of the personnel, just in the makeup of the team with three in the middle. I don't think we're good enough, and I mentioned that last week, to play with two, no matter who that is. And I just felt Cullen and Hendrick were struggling in that department. But he brought in, obviously, Malumbi and Knight into that central area, and the turnaround was unbelievable. And I was lucky enough to be over in Poland during the week as well, Reggie, and it was absolutely brilliant performance. Obviously, Nathan Collins will get all the headlines, and I'm sure we'll talk about him in a minute.
Before
we get to him, though, I think you should point out Dara O'Shea was magnificent. Dara Lenehan, who was making his first competitive start at 28, was brilliant. And the two young boys in the middle, Malumbi and Knight, ran themselves into the ground. Unbelievable effort and energy. And Josh Cullen, who was making his 60th start of the season, Reggie. And I was getting tired looking at him, the amount of energy and work he was putting into it. So it was a brilliant performance. And of course, as you say, Nathan Collins, who was just head and shoulders above all that, which is some statement when you think of how good the rest of them were. He was just unbelievable. Even bar the goal, his whole defensive performance in terms of his composure and his attitude and application, and even his leadership qualities for one so young, he was absolutely amazing.
Funnily enough, he was my man in the match, in the Ukraine match, in the Aviva as well. I just thought he ran all night. He was all around the pitch. And, you know, it was lovely to see that finish. You could see what it meant to him as well. It really meant a lot to him to get that goal.
Yeah, I think to be fair, Reggie, and you'll notice even with young players coming into squads, he plays with almost like a youthful exuberance, and it's almost like an abandonment. It's like he's so fearless. He's just out there. He belongs on the stage. And as you say, it doesn't matter who he's playing against or who he's up against. It doesn't faze him. And that's the impression I get with him. Yeah. But the one thing that impressed me even more so from the first couple of games, because he played in the middle of a three against Ukraine, whereas the previous games he played to the right-hand side of a three, which sometimes allows you a little bit more freedom to step into the middle and play. But in the middle of the three, I just felt there was another angle to his game in terms of his organisation and his defensive qualities as well. And he was the one orchestrating everything from the back, and he was still able to step in like we've seen with the goal. So he's some talent, and it'll be interesting to see in terms of his club career where he goes now, because it was such an impressive performance. Bar the goal, Reggie, even if he didn't score the goal he did, I'd still be raving about him he was that good. Yeah,
Gaelic Games. Dublin Minor footballers last Sunday were the last underage teams to make their championship exit. Dave Reynolds' Young Blues going down 10 points to 7 at O'Connor Park in Tullamore against Galway to end the dream of a first All-Ireland crown at that level since 2012. So disappointment for that group, but they do have the memory of a Leinster championship win in 2022. And hopefully some, if not all, of those players can proceed to the under 20 squad over the next couple of years, and then ultimately to challenge for places in the senior squad as well. A better news for Dublin ladies senior team. They opened their three-team TG Cahir All-Ireland campaign with a 5-14-2-4 win over Cavan out at the Knoll last Saturday. Indeed, Clonwirra GAA club hosting that. Hometown star Carla Rowe hit 2-3, while the St. Sylvester's duo, the All-Ireland Intermediate Queens, of course, Nicole Owens and Sinead Ahern shared 3-1 between them, Owens coming off the bench to hit a brace of goals. Dublin boss Mick Bowen spoke to me post-match, and it's fair enough to say that he was quite happy with his side's performance over the course of the hour.
You know, we're delighted to get some players back there, like Carla and Sinead. Getting game time is really important. But overall, very good, yeah.
And all six of your starting forwards score from play as well, which is a pleasing for you.
Well, you're telling me news there, Declan, now, so I'll make note of that. Look, there was decent stuff. I thought some of the defending was really good. We're getting girls now beginning to block, which takes a little bit of time. I thought some of their foot passing at stages were good. We were probably very narrow in the first in the opening 15 minutes where we went up the central passage, and then we just became a little bit more expansive and it opened up for them. So, good afternoon's work.
Yeah, I'm pleased with the contribution of your bench as well. Nicole Owens coming off to score 2 goals, and Niamh Hedderton chipping in with a fine point as well.
Yeah, when we have everybody, we're very competitive, as we found out during the National League. When you're missing a few, all of a sudden you're going back to girls who are learning a little bit still, and obviously that's a good thing in one way, but at this time of year, you know, you're trying to roll out the big guns.
And off to a flying start now, and a trip to Tipperary to look forward to next week.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's the beauty of having a squad, because if you don't, you can overload players. So, we certainly be looking to use the squad over the next 3 weeks and see where that brings them off.
Look at the energy that Lindsay Davey and Sinead Ahern showed out there today. I mean, they were really rolled back the clock with their performances today.
Well, Sinead is the one. I mean, Lindsay, obviously, we have huge respect for the man. But I mean, my own situation, as you know, started off back in 2002, and we brought Sinead Ahern in as a young 17-year-old. But, for anyone in sport to have the appetite to go and do what she's doing is just remarkable. And, as a coach, I certainly feel a much stronger coach with her as part of our armoury. And I'm not just talking about the player, but what she does around the edges and the education she gives to young girls. I certainly know if I had a daughter involved, I'd want her around them. Because of the messages she passes on. So to have her here again for another season is just incredible.
Yes, indeed it is. Absolutely fantastic to see Sinead still involved with the team. The former 4-in-a-row All-Ireland winning skipper, of course. I have to say, first of all, well done to everybody connected with the Clonwara Club out there in Donal last Saturday. Superb organisation, and courtesy as well to us press people. So well done to everybody there. Dublin in action tomorrow afternoon. Game 2 of the Championship, playing Tipperary and Temple Tuohy at 2:00. And 10 changes made by Mick Bowen to his starting 15 for that particular game. More on that next week. Okay, you are listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. It's Declan Drake here in the GA section, along with Sean Lane. We turn now to Camogie and Dublin's Glenn Dimplex All-Ireland campaign. Today sees Game 4, a trip to Clare for a 5 p.m. throw-in at Cusick Park in Ennis. The Dubs have a win, a draw and a loss in their 3 previous games, and are third in the 6-team group. And today they play the team who are bottom in the shape of Clare. Delighted now to be joined on the phone by former Dublin and Cork Camogie star Sarah Nell to have a look forward to this afternoon's game and to discuss Dublin's championship prospects. Good morning to you, Sarah.
Good morning, Declan.
Oh, nice clear line. Thank God for that.
Sarah, no panic. I'm up in Niamh Maren Oaks, actually. I'm just off the pitch. We had an 8 o'clock training session.
Oh, God. Hardy women out in Maren Oaks, that's for sure.
That's for sure, indeed.
Of course, the great Kathleen Colreavy, amongst others. Good morning to you, Kathleen, indeed, if you're listening to us this morning out there in Portmarnock. But as I say, Sarah, game 4 for the Dublin Camogie team this afternoon. A win, a draw and a loss to your native Cork last time out. Third in the group, but still in a very good position for advancement if they can start with a win against Clare this afternoon.
I'm so excited for the group today. For the first time in a long time, this championship is in their hands and they get to decide how this goes. I think the games against Cork, Tip, even the game against Down in Croke Park, they've stood so much to the group this year because they've really created a sense of belief. And they're playing for each other, which is brilliant. You know, last year was about survival, survived relegation twice, and they came back this year with a massive appetite. And every game I've seen, I've loved their direct style of play, the work rate, the communication. Adrian's done a brilliant job with them this year.
They're a little bit unfortunate not to have a couple of more points on the board, of course, because Tipperary snatched a late draw in their meeting in Parnell Park.
Yeah, and look, you know, they were 3 points up. Roisin Howard was sent off for Tipperary. 14 against 15. Sometimes the team that drops a man has a bit more impetus, and probably that's what happened. The Tip girls really, really focused on the job at hand in the last 15 minutes and just chipped away at that lead. We were all disappointed after the match because we did feel it was like an opportunity lost. But you know, that was only game two, so there was 3 more games to go. And I think the Dubs got a bit of belief out of that as well, because if you think Tip are top four the last 3 years, you know, they've been in Croke Park, playing in semi-finals, been very consistent. So the gap has definitely been bridged very quickly.
A defeat to Cork, that will happen. They're going to be there or thereabouts when the big prize is handed out in a couple of months' time. But again, playing the bottom two teams in the group, there's a tremendous possibility of serious advancement this year for them if they can get the 2 wins.
Yeah, now, I suppose Clare and Wexford are coming a little late. Like, they got their wins to stay in the championship in the last rounds, and that breeds a bit of confidence. The game initially today was to be in Meelick, and I was a little disappointed, saying, God, what are Clare dragging Dublin out to Meelick for? But, you know, sense has prevailed, and the game is now in Cusack Park, which is brilliant, because that's where championship senior camogie should be played. So I think Dublin will get a boost from that as well. You know, stadium hurling, having been in Parnell Park. I think that Clare had a bit of a, I suppose they had a long run in that they went probably 3-4 games in the Munster Championship, and that probably contributed to the fatigue they had at the start of the All-Ireland Championship. So I would be a bit wary today that they'll actually be fresh, having had a week off. But I do think Dublin can definitely do a job against Clare today.
Yeah, please God, you say tremendous progress being made by Adrian and the group as well, and how fantastic it would be for them to get to an All-Ireland quarter-final at least. Sarah, I did mention finally in the intro there, you a former Dublin and Cork star, so no doubt your eyes are wandering towards Tom Semple's Field and Thurles a little bit later on for the clash against Galway.
Oh, more than that. I've got 4 tickets. I've got 2 terrace and 2 stand. I'm trying to sell my terrace tickets. I'm heading to Semple as soon as this is over. I can't wait. A little nervous. I think Galway, you know, so disappointed in the Leinster final, will come out today and give something different. And I hope Cork are prepared for that. It just feels like the game against Antrim last week, Cork gave away 2 cheap goals early on, and I'd hate for that to happen today against Galway, because you wouldn't be able to pull those back.
They're good hurling people around Tracton and into Douglas as well, so I'm sure Kieran has the plan well worked out for them. Sarah, we are going to let you go, because I know you like to maybe get into Hazel's and have a bite to eat or something before you make the trip up the hill there to Semple Stadium. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme this morning and giving us that insight into the Dublin camogie scene. Enjoy Thurles today.
Thanks a million, Declan. Bye.
Fair play to Sarah Nell, their former Dublin camogie and the Cork camogie star as well. Sean Lane, our regular hurling analyst, is with us here in studio. We're going to be talking hurling in a moment, the quarterfinals of the senior championship on this afternoon with Liam Dunn as well. But Sean, a keen follower of the camogie scene, and they've done really, really well this year, but a tremendous opportunity for advancement. Just explain to us the permutations and the importance of victory today for them.
Yeah, I think Sarah put her finger on it there, basically saying that it's in their own hands this time. I mean, if they win their last 2 games, they'll end up coming second in the group, which would probably give them a far more favourable draw in the quarterfinal than if they were third. But they have to win the 2 games. I would agree with what Sarah has said. They're definitely looking very, very well coached, etc. One thing that, you know, to advance it even more defensively, I think they're really, really good. They've conceded 12 points, 10 points, 2-9, but were not probably getting enough scores. You know, 110, 9 points and 10 points. Probably won't win a semi-final or a quarter-final of an All-Ireland. So he needs to just get an extra little bit of a plan and get the girls, you know, all sucked into a new plan where perhaps maybe give away 5 or 10% defensively, but that creates maybe 20% more attacking power. You know, the two girls up front, the two Aislinns, Aislinn Mar and Aislinn O'Leary, doing really, really well. But they'll need contributions from about four, perhaps five forwards to advance to the next level.
Yeah, we wish them every success. The game, as Sarah said there, was switched from Meelic to Cusick Park in Ennis, which is fantastic to see because they should always be playing these type of matches in major county grounds, just as Dublin did against Tipperary earlier in the championship. So the best of luck to everyone there this afternoon and indeed against Wexford in the next game as well. Now, speaking of Wexford, they will be participating in the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship quarter-final this afternoon when they travelled to Semple Stadium in Thurles, and they will be playing Clare, of course, down there this afternoon. Liam Dunn, former All-Ireland winner with the Model County of 1996, joins us once again on the programme this morning. A very good morning to you, Liam.
Good morning, Declan. Morning, Sean.
Morning, Liam.
No doubt, like Sarah Nell, you're looking forward to your trip to Semple Stadium a little bit later on this afternoon. But Liam, after two games in the Leinster Hurling Round Robin this year, you wouldn't have thought, surely, that you would be going to Thurles in at the end of June for an All-Ireland quarter-final. But fair play to you down there. You dug it out well. That fantastic victory against Kilkenny in Nolan Park, sealing the deal.
Yeah, no, look, I suppose we got out of jail in Wexford Park against Galway to come out with a draw in the end there, really. We got a very favourable home decision from the referee at the debt, to be fair about it. And, you know, Dublin beat us fair and square, which I felt they would. We drew with Westmeath, and we needed Kilkenny then to advance. And in fairness to the boys, they put in a great performance against Kilkenny. You know, and we got our due reward, and we're now meeting Clare again, I think, for the fourth time in five or six years. So we need a victory badly today now, to be honest with you, you know.
Yeah, but it's just tremendous to be there, isn't it? We're a little bit envious here in the capital of you, because a couple of months ago we thought that we were going to be in your position. But look, that's the way it goes. The best teams always reach the latter stages. Just a point, Liam, as a former manager in that as well. Clare, of course, had their issues during the week with Rory Hayes and Peter Duggan. Both players cleared to play this afternoon, but not listed by Brian Lowen to start. Surely he'll play the two of them. You would be expecting that.
Sure, he will. And look, I'm a Wexford man to the backbone there, and I'm delighted actually the two boys got off there as well. I think sometimes trial by Sunday game with some of our former analysts there, I think sometimes a little bit over the top. I think they'd be better off if they concentrated on the play, maybe showed more of the action rather than highlighting things that are happening within games. But look at it, I suppose I was there before, involved with Wexford back in 2014, and we drew with Clare down in Ennis and went extra time and we came back to Wexford Park. But I suppose a little small story there, my youngest son Jack there, living down in Wexford there, he was 6 years of age at the time, and he said to me going into Wexford Park that we weren't going to a battle today, we were going to a war. And I think that's what Wexford have to bring to Thurles today, is a war with Clare, because we've been beating them. They've beaten us the last couple of years, but tactically they've beaten us as well. Whether it's a Davy Fitzgerald factor or what, I don't know. But we've got serious players in Lee Chin and Conor McDonald and Rory O'Connor, and we need to play them close to goal where they're going to do damage. Like, whereas over the last number of years, I think we've had one guy inside the 45-yard line, and you're not going to win games, the big games, you know, by playing that system. So hopefully today, the Wexford boys are going to go for the juggler from the time the ball is thrown in and have a go at this. But at the same time, I think Brian Lowen has done a fantastic job down there in Clare. He's galvanised the players in the panel, and Peter Duggan back has been a huge addition to him. But if we want to play sweepers today, possibly John Conlon will come out as the man of the match. That's what I'd be afraid of. So I hope we're going to take the bull by the horns and go for the juggler today. And I think we're in for a real battle all right now. it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it.
I sincerely hope, Liam, that you're making a trip to Croke Park in a couple of weeks' time for an All-Ireland semi-finalist. It's nothing really, I think, like the passion of the Wexford supporters for their hurling team and the run that they're on at the moment is only fantastic for the county in general. Like, everyone needs a boost at the moment, let's be honest. So hopefully they can give them that boost this afternoon. Liam, thank you very much indeed for joining us this afternoon. You enjoy your trip to Semple Stadium this afternoon as well.
I will indeed, and thank you very much for having me on.
Good to meet you.
Thank you.
Liam Dunn there, Os Loch Gorman, 1996 All-Ireland winner. Sean Lane is with us in the studio. We'll just have a brief look at the other quarter-final this afternoon, which is Cork and Galway. Cork, like Wexford, Sean, wouldn't perhaps have expected to be at this stage of the competition, considering how it started for them in the Munster round robin. But they're there against Galway, the beaten Leinster finalists. This is set up to be a spicy affair.
There's no doubt, Declan, and I'd agree 100%. After two games, you know, Cork people were saying, you know, it's the same old story. Maybe we'll find out today, Declan, whether they got a little bit lucky. I mean, they played Waterford in Walsh Park, and Waterford were expected to win. And I know before you go any further, you'll remind me it was Waterford were my tip to win the All-Ireland. But Waterford kind of collapsed that day. And the second day out then, after that, Cork went to Thurles and comprehensively beat Tipperary, having started badly. So, you know, they've either improved an awful lot or you know, they've probably met the two weaker teams in the group. They didn't cover themselves in glory up in Corrigan Park the last day. But a couple of things that you would have to say about Cork. Some of the forwards are absolutely flying. Conor Lahan, you know, Robbie O'Flynn, even Seamus Harnedy, doing extremely well. So they seem to have worked out. If you remember, Declan, the very first match in the Championship, they were turned over for 2-12 by Limerick. They've cut those mistakes down, which is good, and hopefully scored more. So they'll be formidable today and hard to beat.
So who will be in Croke Park in a couple of weeks' time in the semi-finals? From Cork, Galway, quickly.
Well, you do expect a backlash from Henry Shefflin's crowd as well. The fact that it's in Semple Stadium, Cork have been beaten by Galway the last four times, so I think Cork will probably get there.
Cork in that one. Finally, the other one, Clare Wexford.
Well, as good of friends and all as I am with Liam Dunn, I'd probably have to go for Clare today. They've had the better matches. They've Limerick played twice and drew twice in 70 minutes with them and beat everyone else in Munster. That's some form, Declan. So.
It's time to turn our attention to rugby now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Irish Independent journalist and the left wing podcaster, Will Slattery. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
Good, good. I was calling you Will Smith earlier on, but I don't think Will Smith knows too much about the rugby, so we'll get you instead. Far better talking to you. It was a bit disappointing, is the only way you can describe last weekend. A bit of an anticlimax. We thought we'd have at least one Irish team in the final this weekend, and they both bowed out, and Ulster probably the most heartbreaking of all for them, the way they went out.
Yeah, and it kind of, unfortunately for them, it follows a recurring theme of them kind of letting late leads slip and not being able to close out the game. You know, Toulouse was similar earlier in the season when they had them on the ropes and conceded a late try. Obviously, conceding a try after 85 minutes on the clock is particularly heartbreaking. They just ran out of a bit of steam. They ran out of a bit of, probably a bit of quality off the bench as well when the game was in the melting pot. You know, so that the Stormers were putting on a lot of pressure. And it does kind of make for a little bit of an anticlimax, as you say. Like, you have to give the South Africans huge credit coming in this season. It's an All South African final, but it probably won't move the needle in Ireland as much as if you had even Ulster in there. But obviously, we were hoping for an All-Irish final, ideally.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be hard to see that there'll be too many tuning in for perhaps six this evening, given the way it has panned out. Leinster kind of... you know, it was only a point in the end, but I think the scoreline flattered them a little bit. They really just didn't show up either compared to what their normal form is. And I think shocked a lot of people with that result as well.
Yeah, look, I'm really interested to see how the Leinster players kind of bounce back for this New Zealand tour in a couple of weeks' time. It's been a very disappointing end to the season for all four provinces, really. Like, Munster didn't turn up for their last couple of games. Connacht haven't played a meaningful game since April. Leinster had two really surprising defeats where they didn't play well. And they're going to be the bulk supplier to the starting team that plays the All Blacks in the first test in Eden Park on July 2nd. So it's a massive job for Andy Farrell, I think, to pick up the players mentally and to get them kind of recharged, because some of the guys in particular, like someone like Ty Furlong looked, you know, battered and bruised and pretty tired. You know, I thought he probably wasn't reaching his usual heights. Other guys like Jack Conan have kind of just kind of fallen out of form and just haven't been as prominent as they were, say, around November time when Ireland beat the All Blacks and were playing so well. A lot of guys maybe aren't hitting the quite the same height. Some guys like Josh van der Flea, Robbie Henshaw, to be fair, are still at the top of their game. But a few others do look like they're kind of maybe waiting for the end of the season. That's why it's such an intriguing and difficult prospect having to go to New Zealand for three tests now.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about that in a few moments, but I just need to get your view on the game tonight before we leave it entirely behind us. Who do you think is going to get the result in that final between the Stormers and the Bulls?
I think the Bulls have an outside chance. I know they are underdogs and the Stormers are at home, but I think they just have a little bit more game management about them. Like, Manny Leboch is an exciting at half, but I don't think he offers a huge amount of control. His goal kicking is suspect. I know he nailed the one that mattered, I suppose, last weekend, but they could have been in a much better position had he converted a few earlier in the game. I just think the Bulls and Jake White is a good coach. I think he'll have a good game plan for them. I think they're peaking at the right time. I think their form line over the last couple of weeks has been really, really strong. I think they might have just enough with a big performance from Marcel Coetzee to get over the line.
Be interesting to see. Us diehard rugby fans will have to watch it, but as we said, there may not be as much interest as there would have been, but it'll be interesting to see how it pans out nonetheless. Okay, Andy Farrell named 40 players, you mentioned it there, tour to New Zealand, the toughest place in the world to go on tour, but also one of the best, I have to say, really enjoyable place to tour, wonderful people, wonderful country, scenery, everything else, but when you get out on that pitch and you're getting battered, it doesn't quite feel that way. So he's picked a squad, 40 players, with some eyebrow raisers in there, some exclusions as well, for players that possibly could have felt they were worthy of a place. And what did you make overall of that squad?
Yeah, as you say, when 40 players are included, it's kind of difficult to have too many massive objections because a lot of players are there in the first place. But there's one guy who really jumped out to me whose name wasn't on the list, and that was Ross Maloney, who has had a really good season for Leinster, and I think by consensus was probably one of the more improved players or the most improved player in Irish rugby over the course of the campaign. So he's not there. Kieran Treadwell is there from Ulster, who doesn't start for Ulster, who only got a couple of minutes off the bench in that semi-final, as I said, didn't make much of an impact. I think he's, according to the website, has played about 500 minutes this year. Ross Maloney's played 1,500 minutes, so about three times as much game time, and been a really key contributor for Leinster. So if I was Ross Maloney, I'd be very frustrated not to get the nod. Considering Kieran Treadwell, I think, has had a good, a few opportunities. I don't think he's really taken them. Someone like Jack O'Donoghue, probably a bit unlucky as well. He was named Munster's Player of the Year. He was really consistent, didn't get into the squad.
That was my shock. That was the biggest one for me, it really was. I couldn't believe he didn't get included.
Yeah, like as Andy Falcon has said, he was asked about O'Donoghue specifically, and he kind of said, well, like, which back row are you leaving out there? Like, and I take his point, like, to an extent, you know, like, there is a, like, it's just like, you know, Doris, Cohn, and Van der Fleer. Peter Mann, he was in a rich vein of form before he picked up that injury against Toulouse. You know, Gavin Coombs is a really promising young player as well. So, like, Nick Kimmeny had a really good season also. So I do see that it is kind of hard to leave one of those guys out. And then if you're looking at people who are maybe a little fortunate, like, the out-half situation is still very much up in the air. Like, Harry Byrne is in there as the third out-half. I think he only played 500 minutes this year. He only started four games at out-half this year. He's only actually kicked 13 goals. He kicked 10 conversions and 3 penalties this year, which, like, is very, very small amount for a guy who's now being asked to go over to tour New Zealand. But it just kind of shows how far back the out-half chasing pack have gone. Like, for me, Johnny Sexton has put even more daylight between himself and number two. And, like, Joey Carberry is kind of the consensus number two, but I don't think he even had a particularly good season either. I think it's really a troubling position for Andy Farrell to be in when no one has even come close to putting pressure on someone who's going to be 37 at the end of this tour.
Yeah, it is. It's very worrying. I kind of sort of understand the Harry Byrne inclusion when they're trying to work towards the future, and they're criticised for not doing that, so I understand what they're trying to do there. But then you've got, like, Ross Byrne, who arguably maybe didn't quite go as well for him towards the end of this season as you'd want. He didn't have the performances that he may have wanted. But then you've got Jack Carthy. You're left scratching your head is the only way. I mean, I don't think Harry Byrne is going to get any game time as such. He may get a little bit against the Maori or whatever, but I don't really see any position situation where, with barring injury, that he's going to be involved in any test against New Zealand. So is this a tour where he's just being brought along to try and incorporate him into the squad?
Yeah, but at the same time, like, it's not a like ridiculous prospect, say, for Johnny Sexton to pick up an injury when he's out there. Like, yeah, he's been playing really well, but like Johnny Sexton, you know, does pick up, you know, his fair share of, you know, soft tissue injuries. It's a long tour. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that Harry Byrne might be pressed into action. And it's the same with some other positions. Like front row, we're a bit light as well. If there's an injury, like, you know, we're on Kelleher out, Dan Sheehan will start. You've Rob Herring and Dave Heffernan, who are, you know, good, solid players, but they're not like as good as Dan Sheehan or Ronan Kelleher. And then, you know, at prop, you know, Jeremy Lochman's been included. He doesn't even start for Munster. He's our third choice loose head. It shows the front row options, in particular on the loose head side after Andrew Porter, are quite thin. Like Keane Healy, a really good servant, but at this stage of his career, is kind of winding down. Like, as I said, Tadhg Furlong does look like he's like not firing at 100% fitness at the moment. So will he be able to last three tests? And you're looking to someone like Tom O'Toole potentially, or Finlay Beadham. So front row will be another area that I think it'll be a big test on this tour.
Yeah, no doubt about it. How do you think he's going to go with it? There's a mixture there of some very experienced players, some players arguably coming towards the end of their career, as you mentioned already, and then some very inexperienced players. And at the end of the day, you know, the 29th of June is the first one against the Maori. That's going to roll around pretty quickly. What does Andy Farrell have to do with this tour? Is he picking old and young together and just saying, look, we're using this as a development tour? What are the Irish rugby public going to be happy with?
He's going to pick his strongest team for the first test, and I think he's going to pick his strongest team for the second test. I don't think there'll be any experimentation for the first. He wants to win this tour. The players want to win this tour. Like, Johnny Sexton is going on this tour. Like, it's not as if he's decided to leave a couple of the veterans at home. I think it would be more meaningful to Ireland to go and win a game in New Zealand than it would be to potentially just say, oh, we're going to start a couple of young guys to give them that exposure. That is valuable in its own way. But the confidence boost of Ireland going away from home and winning in the toughest place to win in the world, I think will be immeasurable going into a World Cup where we're going to have to take 2-3 massive scalps even to even get to a semi-final for the first time. I think that's extremely valuable. You look back to 2003 when England won the World Cup. That summer they beat New Zealand in New Zealand, and they beat Australia in Australia, and it gave them a massive confidence boost heading into that World Cup. So I think, like, Andy Farrell will pick his strongest team. And then potentially if Ireland are, say, 2-0 down going into the third test, he might say, is this a time now to give Joey Carberry a start at half? Is this a time now to experiment in one or two other positions? Give Gavin Coombs a start? I think he'll probably go with as close to a strong team as he can in the key positions. He might opt to freshen up that back row. As I said, Jack Conan, I don't think, has been hitting maybe the heights he was. Potentially, he might, you know, change one or two guys there. But I think for the most part, he will go with his strongest team. And that Eden Park test to kick things off will just be two locked and loaded sides, and it should be an absolute belter.
Yeah, it's an interesting setup, all right. It's funny, I'm just looking at it here. There's 7 back threes, 5 centres, and then, of course, if you've got your 3 out halves. But one of those centres that Kieran Frawley could have covered potentially that out half position as well. So there's that. And then you're kind of wondering, is there a need for 7 back threes? When you're looking at those, you got the likes of Larmour, Keenan, Lowe, Earls is there with the experience. Mac Hansen's had a good run of form. You know, you only need 3 of them out of that 7. So it's, you might have spread the selection slightly differently.
Well, like, there is the 2 games against the Maori, which, like, none of the frontliners are going to be involved in. So they play the Maori on the Wednesday and New Zealand on the Saturday. True. In the first test. So there's going to be 23 guys of a 40-man squad used. So there's going to be, a couple of, like, there's going to be 5-6 guys who are going to have to play again 3 days later. So that will be an interesting dynamic that you only really get on a Lions tour that you wouldn't really get traditionally over the last number of years on an international tour. So I think he's picked a squad with that in mind, that he will have to have 3 back three guys starting on Wednesday and have to have a completely different back three almost certainly on the Saturday, which probably played into his thinking a little bit. Like, 40 players is like, I think you can only bring 31 to a World Cup, or maybe 32. So it shows that he has been given the latitude to bring like a lot more players because the schedule kind of demands it. So it will be interesting to see, as you mentioned, someone like Kieran Frawley there, what position he plays in that Maori game. Is he going to be playing at 12? Would they opt to go with him at 10? Because he's a player who has a really interesting future coming up as well. Like, he played on the bench in the Champions Cup final and didn't get a minute. He only got a couple of minutes against the Bulls the following week when the season was on the line in both campaigns, and he's been really good, and they didn't deem him worthy of kind of more than a handful of minutes. So if I was him, I'd be very frustrated with how the season ended. So this is kind of a pretty big tour for him too. Even if it's just the Maori he plays against, if he has a couple of good performances, in particular if he has a good performance at out half, it could really turn the cat amongst the pigeons going into next season in terms of where they might opt to use him going forward. He very seldom plays a 10 for Leinster anymore. So yeah, but he's a really interesting person, I think, going into the store.
It's interesting because a lot of people think that is his best position, but we'll see how that unfolds. And then finally, just to say to you, I suppose you look at these tours and it's the end of a season and we're kind of, whatever, you know, the season. But I guess what we're forgetting is there is a World Cup around the corner. And for a lot of these players, this is a crucial tour. You know, you're talking about back row. The likes of Peter Mahoney might have had a bit of a vein of form that you're talking about, but he's under pressure. There's no question. There's younger, fitter back rows coming in there. You've got Conor Murray under pressure. Bundy Aki arguably is under a bit of pressure as well. Keith Earls on the wing. So there are a lot of players going down there that have to really prove something and make sure that they're still in contention for that World Cup squad.
Massively. And as I said a few minutes ago, like the way the season finished for all the four provinces is that like there's no one coming in feeling really good about where they are at the moment. You know, that's why they're all going to have something to prove. Like Leinster are being feted as one of the best teams around. They didn't win a trophy. Munster have had a very poor end of the season. The other two provinces likewise. So I think every player, that's why it's so intriguing. And I know it's the end of a long season, but you know, these players are very well managed. Like there's no reason why these guys shouldn't be ready to go. Like Leinster especially, when the guys went to South Africa, the young guys, the frontliners had 2 weeks in Dublin preparing for the quarterfinal where they weren't playing matches. So that came at a really good time of the season for them. It was almost like a mini reset. So I don't think there's any real reason why they shouldn't be actually going down here and be able to kind of hit close to their best. The question for me is the mental side. Where are these guys at mentally after the heartbreak and the letdown of the club season? There's nothing to focus the minds more, as you say, than going to New Zealand and playing the toughest team on their home patch. And as you say, there's a huge amount of guys who are going to be really looking to prove a point as we head into a November series where we're playing South Africa for the first time under Ozzie Erasmus. That's another massive test. Then you're into Six Nations, and then the World Cup is, it's not that far away from the World Cup, as you say. So there's so many subplots to look forward to over the next couple of weeks.
Time to turn our attention to golf now. I'd like to be joined on the line by Deirdre Smith. Good morning, Deirdre. How are you?
Good, Reggie. And you?
I'm very well, thanks. Very well indeed. Beautiful bit of weather out there and plenty going on in the golf world. We'll start with Leona Maguire. She's gotten back into the form that we were hoping for a bit last week. She's just outside the top 10 with a good round. I think 7 shots off the lead, so not going too bad.
Yeah, fantastic. She's only had one bogey in 36 holes, which is really fantastic. Augurs well for a low round today, which I really think she needs. Cup, she had a lot of good players ahead of her. Yeah. Minji Lee, Cup, Corda. Like, they're not going to come back to her. They're minus 12, minus 14, minus 10. A lot of good players ahead of her. So she really needs a low round today. But coming off a really good finish in the US Open there 2 weeks ago. I know she missed the cut last week, but this is a great bounce back for her this week now. She a good finish this week's now has set her up nicely for next week's major. And I believe that her focus now is going to be the majors. I think that's her next big goal. She's totally comfortable on tour. She's won her tour. She's been a star for the Solheim Cup. And I think now that's her next major goal. That's where she's set in her sights. So, you know, I'm not sure it'll happen this year. Known Leona, she'd probably upset the books. Great performance this week and a good platform for next week's major. The PGA Championship is on next week.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on that and hope that she continues to do well. Of course, the US Open is on, and after Rory's wonderful performance last week winning the Canadian Open, which I think, you know, there was a real, a collective round of applause throughout the country for that. Everyone was delighted to see him doing that. And he's going well again, managing to keep his composure, I suppose, is the way you describe it yesterday. Could have gone a little bit awry after the double bogey, but he kept himself together really, really well. And he's in a brilliant position now to challenge in the Open.
Yeah, look, you couldn't have put it better there, Reggie. Absolutely. It's the manner in which he won last week, you know, where he wobbled, he lost the lead. you know, Justin Thomas was breathing down his neck. He was playing with them. I mean, there's a lot of pressure when somebody's playing with you and they're breathing down your neck. It's different if they're in another three wall somewhere and you just see it going up on the board. But when they're your partner and you know what a good player he is and you know that he's come off the PGA or the PGA win, and he just kept his composure and put out two fantastic shots coming in the last two holes, two fantastic wedges, which, you know, it's no secret he's been working really hard on getting his wedge play absolutely spot on. And you could see it even this week again when he got in trouble. He was pitched out, he pitched on, he put, much like Thomas did in the PGA Championship. When he did that in the first hole in the playoff against Alatoris, McIlroy has done the same now with his wedges. His wedges have saved him. And, you know, he's really worked on getting the flight of wedges down a little bit out of the sky so that they're more penetrating and they're going in more at the target. And you can see it this week that there's a level of comfort there that he knows that if he gets out of position off the tee, which he's going to do this week in the US Open, that he can just pitch out and that he's going to rely on his pitching. And again, his putting has improved beyond belief. I mean, yesterday he looked like a triple bogey early on. You know, it had the potential to derail him. It had the potential to just destroy him. And in the past, that would have happened. Mm. No doubt that would have happened. But all this turn line or down the green, and suddenly he was off and running. And I think yesterday was a big challenge for him, and to think that he came through that. I think we'll be celebrating a win on Sunday night, like last Sunday.
That would be amazing, absolutely amazing. And unfortunately, the master of the wedges, Lowry, didn't quite make it as good. But Power is still in a decent position as well. He's going okay, a 70 and a 71.
Yeah, and you know who he's playing with today, Justin Thomas. What a playing partner for him. And, you know, he'll be able to measure himself up against him today. I'm not saying that he will be measuring himself. I know he'll play his own game, but, you know, he'll again see, you know, I'm comfortable here. I'm well able to compete. I'm well able to perform. And he'll see that there's probably very little difference between Justin Thomas and himself today when he's out there playing. And it's just, he's just putting himself in the right positions all the time. I mean, you know, it's a fantastic field there, obviously the best field in the world. And he's right there, you know, he's right there in the mix and he's not out of it. I mean, I know 500 leading it, but anything can happen. You know, every hole is a potential double bogey out there. Mm. So, you know, hats off to Seamus Power, and he's well capable of going low and you know, getting himself right in the hunt again. I mean, he finished fantastic in the PGA, so he's not going to be afraid. He's not going to be overawed now in that position today. So it's a great pairing for him, and we'll probably see a lot of him today because we'll probably see a lot of Justin Thomas. So it'll be nice to see him getting a bit of media coverage.
Thanks for listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend. Ha ha ha.